We are glad to make all of our JCast Network podcasts free for our listeners. However, they are not free to produce and host. Please consider making a donation to JCast Network to help support our work by visiting jcastnetwork.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. Sit back, relax, enjoy the ride. We've got a great show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we'll be doing a rebroadcast of Rabbi Chaim Jachter, wrote a book, The Right to Believe. In the second half of the hour, we'll be featuring Jewish Hour Poet Laureate Michael Druck. Will be making another appearance of some of his wonderful poetry. I actually spoke to him this week and got a preview. This is one of his best poems, I think. It's really cool. We got lots of eclectic Jewish music throughout the show. We are still doing the a cappella stuff. We had a one-day reprieve. It felt so good to be able to listen to music last Thursday on Lag BaOmer. We had a great time at Jewish Ferndale. All the people came down. We had chowed down and we boogied. Yeah, it was an awesome time over there. The portion of the week is the portion of Bechar B'Chukosai, which can be found in the book of Leviticus 25, all the way to the end. Next week, we start the book of Numbers. We've got a wonderful, poignant story all the way at the end. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. PA Chairman Mahmoud Abbas was re-elected chairman of the PLO. The vote came from the newly appointed PLO committee made up mostly of Abbas supporters. The 82-year-old Abbas looked to shore up his power base as Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and the People's Front for the Liberation of Palestine boycotted the meeting. A kite with a firebomb attached floated into an Israeli national forest from Gaza, starting a forest fire. 15 acres of forest were burned. There were no injuries. El Al jumped on the bandwagon, is now offering low-cost ways to buy tickets to Israel. They're lower cost, they're not low cost. So I checked it out this morning. Similar to Spirit and Iceland's WOW Airlines, passengers can choose to pay for bags, meals, and other things normally found on transatlantic flights. James Vincent was arrested for the brutal attack on a Hasidic Jew in Crown Heights last Shabbos. Police charged him with hate crime, assault, and strangulation. Uber suspended, everybody knows about Uber, the famous driver people. Uber suspended one of his drivers in Chicago as Itai Milner, deputy consul general of Israel to the Midwest, was thrown out of the cab for speaking in Hebrew. Uber apologized to Milner. President Trump proclaimed May to be Jewish American Heritage Month. Trump called on Americans to celebrate the heritage and contributions of American Jews and to observe this month with appropriate programs, activities, and ceremonies. The Canadian Parliament recently approved an act that makes every May Canadian Jewish Heritage Month. And finally, the Giro d'Italia bicycle race kicked off in Israel, the first non-European country to host large segments of the bicycle race in its 101 years in existence. This is one of Europe's big races, like the Tour de France. The race ends in Rome in 3 weeks. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in a growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start. You have them online? Okay, let's go to then. Oh, we're not going to do that. Instead, we're going to go to our guest, Rabbi Chaim Jachter, who is the author of the newly released book, Reason to Believe, Orthodox, Rational Explanations of Orthodox Jewish Faith. How are you today, Rabbi Jachter?
Very good. Great to be on the show.
Thank you so much. Okay, Reason to Believe. It seems to me that that title is somewhat of a contradiction of terms. The word belief means I have no reason to do it. This is the way I do it. And reason means I'm doing it because. So it's sort of like saying I'm doing this because I have no reason to do it is where the title would surely could be translated. But if you could just tell us, Rabbi Chaim Jachter, about the back story behind Reason to Believe.
That's a great question. And the essence that I try to show in this book is that being religious is a more rational conclusion and way of life than being secular. It makes much more sense. It makes much more sense to say that the world was planned rather than just an accident. It makes much more sense to say that there's a God than not to believe in a God. It makes much more sense to say that the Bible is a divinely authored document much more rational than to say that it's a product of human hands. The book is not proof to Orthodox Judaism. It's rational explanations of it. We don't try to give proof for it. We try to show it's a choice. Hashem, God gives us a choice. He wants to give us a choice. But it's the right choice to make. It's the only reasonable choice to make. It's far more reasonable than the secular choice.
Okay. Is there something that was compelling? Is there something going out in the world I hadn't reported on the news here on the Jewish Hour that led you to think that it was necessary to write this book right now, Chaim?
I felt this book was extraordinarily necessary because, unfortunately, so many people, even within the Orthodox community, they wonder, why are we doing this? What's the logic of what we're doing? And so many youngsters saying that, oh, these stories, these are fables, fairy tales. And in one school, not the school that I teach in one school, I heard this is becoming dominant amongst students in an Orthodox school, saying that these are fairy tales. It's not really true. I try to show that it makes much more sense. Torah belief is a far more reasonable and rational approach than the secular approach. These are not fairy tales. These are truth.
Okay. Now, so Maimonides did something like this about 850 years ago, just sort of like in the middle of one of his commentaries. He said, oh, by the way, these are the 13 things that people believe and sort of like gave like little proofs behind them. So people, we've had our beliefs codified for a very long time now. So tell me about Maimonides, Rambam, and then this Reasons to Believe.
Maimonides is extraordinarily important, to say the least. But we do have new issues that need to be dealt with. Maimonides had his issues that he had to deal with in his time. He had the conflict between the Aristotelian view of the world is eternal and the Torah view that the world is created, and he dealt with it in his ways. We mentioned it in the book. And in our time, we have the challenge, well, is the world, is it 14 billion years old? Is it 6,000 years old? And in the book, what I do is I present a wide range of approaches within the Orthodox community to these issues. One can reject the those who say to reject the science, those who say that to interpret the Torah non-literally, and the approach that I prefer is the one to say that there's more than one story. Torah is rich enough to say that there's more than one way to look at it. Hashem presents two creation stories. The first chapter of Genesis is one creation story. Second chapter of Genesis, second creation story. Science presents us a third creation story. And we believe in there's more than one truth, more than way to one look at it. And just like as we believe the time between sunset and nightfall, which in Hebrew is called Ben HaShemashos, is both night and day. It's not either or, not a zero-sum game, not binary thinking. We believe it could be both night and day. So too, you have the scientific way of looking at creation. You have the Torah way of looking at creation. Both are valid. They don't necessarily have to be in conflict. So these are kinds of issues that Maimonides didn't have in his time in the 12th century, but we have in our time. We have archaeology that we have to deal with, and we have the Holocaust, the challenges of the Holocaust that we have to deal with. We live in a permissive world and a world that's not so open to restrictions, and we need explanations. We have to be able to explain to Orthodox Jews why these restrictions are good. Why would one want to choose to live a life of restriction? After all, it seems on the surface to be much more appealing to have no restrictions, but I try to show in the last section of the book how everything that the Torah tells us to do or not to do is in our best interest. God is giving us the roadmap for the best possible life, for the best possible belief system. That's the gift of what the Bible and what the Torah is all about.
Okay, if you're just joining us, our guest today is Rabbi Chaim Jachter. He's written a book called Reason to Believe, Rational Explanations of Orthodox Jewish Faith, printed by Menorah Publishing. There's a line which I've heard from people who are about 20 years older than me plus, that when they were being raised in America, their parents were immigrants, and they were raised in America in the 30s and 40s and 50s. And when they would ask, well, why do we have to do this? The answer that was given is, siz geschriben, because it's written in the Torah. We do things because it's written in the Torah. Understanding that, this must be the absolute truth. The fallacy that then comes up then is, are we proving our beliefs by proving our beliefs? In other words, we're saying everything in the Torah is true because the Torah says it's true. Could you address that, please, Rabbi Jachter?
That's a very, very good point. So I would answer on two different levels. Number one, why do we keep what's in the Torah? Because it's in our best interest. Everything in the Torah is in our best interest. That's number one. That's number one to get across to children, to adults, to anyone who asks, why do we do something? It's in our best interest to do that, or it's in our best interest to avoid doing such and such.
Let me interrupt you. That's going to be a hard line to say to a 16-year-old who, instead of wanting to sit down at the table on Friday night, wants to go out with his friends.
Right.
I think my best interest is going out with my friends, not sitting down with my family at this point.
Right. That's true. And that's why it's to explain why it's in his best interest to be with the family, why Shabbos isn't a person's best interest. But beyond that being in the best interest, well, how do we know this is God that's giving us this information? Then you have to get to the basic point, and that is, what's the difference between our religion and any other religion? The Torah, Judaism, is a product, unlike any other religion, of a national revelation story. Every other religion is the product of a revelation to one individual, to two individuals, and there's very little credibility to that claim to say that they heard God. But when you have our revelation narrative, which is a revelation to an entire nation, that has much more credibility. That's a classic argument that's been made since the time of Rabbi Judah Halevi in the 12th century in Spain, 11th century in Spain, But I try to take this argument to another level, and that is, which of the people that accepted this idea that God spoke to their nation? That's the Jewish people. The Jewish people are, by their very nature, divided into different groups. We're fractious. We're contentious. We're argumentative. We are the only people in the world whose second holiest book is 2,700 pages of argument. 2,700 pages of argument, back and forth. And this is what, and you go to any yeshiva, any serious academy of Jewish learning, and you see arguments and arguments and arguments. That's the nature of our people. That's the way we're described in the Talmud. This is the way we are now. This is the way that the Bible describes us. And this contentious, argumentative people are the ones that accepted the Torah. These are the people that experience, that claim that there is a national revelation. This has to be a true story. It's very unreasonable to say that a people like the Jewish people, a contentious, argumentative, sophisticated people, these people were misled to believe that God spoke to their nation. Hard to believe. Hard to believe such a people like ours would be misled. So it's more than it's Esses Geschrieben. It's more than that it's written. It's the people themselves. The fact that we have this living tradition of a nation, of a whole nation, passing it down from parent to child, generation after generation, claiming that their ancestors experienced a national revelation, and the fact that it's our people, an argumentative, difficult people, that nonetheless accepted this. We are the only people in the world that have this kind of a national revelation experience that's been passed down to generation. We're the people that have that. This is the only reasonable conclusion, is to say it's a product of a divine revelation. Otherwise, there's no way that the Jewish people would have ever accepted it as true.
Okay, I agree with everything you say, Rabbi Chaim Jachter, but let me just put forth, how do we know that there was a national revelation? It's written in the Torah. And here again, we're using the Torah to...
No.
It says in the that God said, "I'm the Lord your God with the Ten Commandments." So it's written in the Torah that it appeared to God appeared to a whole entire nation. So again, we're using the Torah to prove that the Torah is true.
We're not using the Torah. We're using the people. You understand what I'm saying?
No.
It's not just the Torah. It's the people. It's the fact that it's a living tradition. It's the people. It's the people who gather every holiday of Shavuot and tell the story of how they experience the national revelation. It's not just because the book says it. It's because we have this living tradition of a contentious, argumentative people that pass it down generation to generation. And I'd like to take this argument to one more level.
Please.
And that is, yes, it's geschrieben. It's because it's written in the book. But the book also makes predictions. It makes predictions of things that never should have happened. It's like predicting there's going to be snow in July 21st in Flint, Michigan. It's predicting something that shouldn't happen. The Torah predicts the Jewish people are a small people, and yet they're going to bring great blessing to the entire world, and it's happened. The Torah predicts the Jewish people are going to be scattered all over the world, and they're going to be returned to their homeland, to the land of Israel. This shouldn't have happened. That's not the natural course of history. And yet it's happened. It was predicted. The Book of Esther, which describes how Jews narrowly avoided a genocide, in itself says Jews will always be celebrating Purim. That's remarkable. It makes a prediction that this is always going to be observed. How did the authors of this book know that this was going to happen 2,500 years ago, that Jews are going to be celebrating Purim? That's how these are amongst the ways that we know that this is a divinely authored document.
Okay. Again, if you're just joining us, our guest today is Rabbi Chaim Jachter, who has written The Reason to Believe, Rational Explanations of Orthodox Jewish Faith. So I get a question all the time, and I'd like to hear your take on it, as to, listen, you read the Bible, and every other page
somebody has this like godly revelation. They're talking to God. They have an angel come to do them. There is the Bible's like rife with it from beginning to end. In fact, that's what the Bible is a whole collection of people who talk to God. Suddenly, sometime 2,400 years ago, people stopped talking to God, and suddenly there's like no more biblical proportion miracles. So what changed? Why is it that we don't have people, and anybody who actually does stands up now and says, God told me, we usually give them some really strong medication. So, Rabbi Chaim, if you believe.
Yes, that's a good. That's a very smart question. But I don't address this in the book, but we can address it here on this on a wonderful show that I'm so glad to be on, that when the absence of prophecy actually is a maturity, it is gives us a way of maturing. Actually living in an era of prophecy is actually an immature relationship with God. God must give us a choice. He gives us a choice. He's subtle. And only because he's not obvious, only in that way is it a choice for us to be able to believe in God. It's a certain way it's better the way it is now without the prophecy because we have to think. We have to peel back the secular layer that appears on this world, the secular veneer. Remove that and be able to see God's hand. You don't see in the book of Esther, you don't see God, this we did discuss in the book, God's name is not mentioned, but God is obviously involved. So many things happen against all odds, and the whole series of events, when you put it together, how could it have happened without God being involved? And the same thing we have today, if you look at the 1948 war in Israel, Israel's War of Independence, Israel's Six-Day War, Israel's victory was so against all the odds, was so unreasonable for this to happen. So many things had to work out perfectly in order for the Entebbe rescue to work in 1976. The only reasonable conclusion is for today is that God is involved in a subtle way. This way allows us to make the choice. And when we make the choice to see God's hand, that's how we establish a relationship with God. A relationship is not forged by force. A relationship is made by choice. And when God is involved in a subtle way, with enough evidence to make it clear to us, but subtle that it's not completely obvious, we have a choice, we make that choice, and then we have successfully forged a relationship with God.
It's an interesting point that you bring up. The idea of God participating, you might say, sort of like behind the scenes. But with Entebbe, for example, 40 years ago, 41 years ago, the Lubavitcher Rebbe said unequivocally, if that a person has to go, finds himself in Entebbe Airport, he has to say the blessing, Sha'asen Neis B'Makom Zeh, that God perpetrated a miracle in this place. But there were naysayers, right. There were naysayers then, that were saying, no, this was Israeli ingenuity, you know, they put it together and they know how to do this stuff and they managed to do it and it was a coordination, the right place at the right time. You know, this was because of a bunch of smart people that it happened. If you care to comment.
Skeptical people will say that, and God wants us, gives us that choice to be able to come to that conclusion. You can make that conclusion. A person can choose to do that, but it's a poor choice. But God has given us that choice. He wants us to have the choice to hopefully, he wants us to make the good decision. But ultimately, he leaves it to us as a choice. And hopefully, God wants us to make the right choice and to recognize Entebbe as the Lubavitcher Rebbe, as we note in the book, that the Lubavitcher Rebbe noted that this was a miracle. It had to be a miracle. It's so unreasonable. The Lubavitcher Rebbe also interestingly saw God's hand in the capture of the hostages and of the plane was done in such an unusual way. The only reasonable conclusion was to say that God was involved in the capture as well. He for whatever reason, God felt that it was necessary to happen. A skeptic can make the claim it was all coincidence. Just like today, a skeptic can say the whole world, the whole beautiful, complex world that we see, the human eye, the incredible complexity, it's all a coincidence. It's all a coincidence. One could make that claim. One could make that claim, but it's highly unreasonable. And the far more rational way to interpret the creation of the world is there's a God. The far more rational way to interpret it is the way the Lubavitcher Rebbe interpreted it, to say that this was God who was involved. As the Jew says in Hallel, Me'et Hashem Hayit Hazot. This was from God. He made flat things. This was amazing in our eyes. It had to be from God. It's the only reasonable.
Okay.
If someone wins the lottery five times in a row, had to be. It's a coincidence, or there's a manipulation.
I don't know. I haven't won once, so I mean, you know. So, but anyway, so let me just ask you then. We're coming to the end of this segment of the show. Okay, this tome that you have composed, Rational Explanations of Orthodox Jewish Faith. So we're gearing this to people who might be wanting to, say, fall out of Judaism's traditional belief system. And this person would be very rational thinking and very much into it. But do you have another type of a person who's thinking, you know, I'm not into all this Jewish trappings because it's not convenient. Like this 16-year-old that we talked about before, he's not making this rational decision based on some sort of higher intellectual thing, why he wants to go out on Friday night with his friends rather than sitting home with his family. He wants to do it because he feels he's going to feel better doing that. And a lot of motivation for going away from the ideals of Judaism is based on, I'd rather do this. It's called a mumah l'tayavon is the expression in Hebrew. He's doing it. He's leaving because he finds more pleasure doing something else. Can rational arguments be directed at such a person, Rabbi Chaim Yachter?
Absolutely. We have that in the last chapters in the book. We try to explain that, oh, this is the job of rabbis, of teachers, of parents, to be able to spell to show it that the Torah is the greatest pleasure, the greatest joy, but it's a long-term joy, and that the greatest success in life comes from, as it says in Psalms, Azorim Bedima Barina Yusoru, those who sow with tears reap with great joy. In the short term, there may be sacrifice, but in the long term, it's great benefit. Exercise can be very inconvenient. It can be very difficult in the short term, but in the long run, its benefits are manifold, are incredible. How the improvements in life, how it makes so much of a better life. And yes, it's hard to convince someone who needs to be more careful about their eating to avoid that 1,000 1,000 calorie hamburger. But that's the success of diet and exercise is to be able to look at the long term benefits, not look beyond the short term to the long term, and so too with Torah, the Torah lifestyle. It does require short term a sacrifice that leads to long-term incredible benefits.
Okay, that's going to wrap us up for this part of the show. Again, our guest was Rabbi Chaim Yachter. The book is Reason to Believe, Rational Explanations of Orthodox Jewish Faith, published by Menorah Publishing. Very well-written book, Rabbi Yachter. I enjoyed it immensely. And thank you so much for coming on and sharing us and enlightening us with your insights.
It's been a great pleasure. Okay. Thank you for inviting me.
Take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-8255.
6249800. That's 6249800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to The Jewish Hour. We have up next for your listening pleasure, this is the Maccabees, and it's Lachado D. And that was the Maccabees. Up next, we have, this is called Visicano, Remember Us. And it was written by Pinchas Wolf, who is a local chazan. He wrote, came up, I didn't know this, this one didn't get sent to me. I just came across this one accidentally, looking for a cappella music. Produced a CD of Cantorial Delights, and just recently released this one. I think it's just web available, YouTube. For your listening pleasure, so let's listen to Visicano.
Oiskim batoiro uva mi yitzvois Vezakei ni liroi sponim uvnei vonim Oiskim batoiro uva mi yitzvois וזכני לי רזבונים ובני בונים. אוי סכים בתוירו ובמייצבויס, וזכני לי רזבונים ובני בונים. אוי סכים בתוירו וזכני לראי זבונים ובני בונים, אוי סכים בתוירו ובמצוות. וזכני לראי זבונים ובני בונים, אוי סכים בתוירו. וזכני לראי זבונים ובני בונים, אוי סכים בתוירו ובמצוות.
Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online the Jewish Hour Poet Laureate, Mr. Michael Druck. How are you today, Michael?
Thank God, I'm fine, thank you.
Good to hear, good to hear. Well, you're here to read us some of your new poetry, so let's further ado, let's get right down to it. I'm excited, I'm chomping at the bit.
The first poem is called The Spirit of Heaven. Now Moses led his people with the help of God, moved by the words of Hashem. They ran to their freedom way back when, moved by the words of God. Women and children and men of age, brave ancient cousins, fighters and the sage, moved by the words of God. Wow, was it ever nice to see bull-necked soldiers while we ran free, over the land and across the sea, moved by the promise of God. We climbed a mountain and waited for his words, brought down by Moses, and we overheard words of Torah forever to hear, cementing our purpose here and there. Wherever we are sure to be chosen to lead man's history, waiting for Mashiach to set men free, moved by Torah and God.
Wow, that's pretty incredible. And I like this, one of my favorite poems, I think, that I've heard you read in how many years that you're reading
it.
This is, what was the inspiration behind that poem, Michael? Please incite us.
Our quest to combat anti-Semitism and be firm in our solid belief in God and the coming of Mashiach.
Okay. That's a pretty deep inspiration, I would say.
So, okay, we've got time for one more. Do you have one prepared? Another one for us, Michael?
One more. Okay, here it is. Behold the waters of the sea. It expands his holiness for me. An idle chatter or conversation is no better than a barking dog. Behold the Torah and its holy words. I have seen its light and heard. My thirst needs quenching, not air, not worth mentioning. Idle chatter is like a barking dog. I learn nothing in a fog. But when a wave hits my face, I am soothed by his thought and grace, and have holiness and faith. My thirst keeps me from disgrace. I wish to mirror Torah on my face. Hearing holiness and giving chase to what sages thought and were keeping pace. I have a thirst to quench, which is me, here or out to sea. An idle chatter or conversation is like a barking dog.
Well, I can understand that. Just here you are, you're like, people are just like into like talking about nothing, and you just don't want to hear about it. It's just like, no, spare me.
Jokes. Just give me something I can use.
Okay, I don't mind jokes. Actually, when I hear a joke, there's very often I try to incorporate it into something that I'm teaching.
Right.
So jokes usually come in effect. But just, I don't want to hear what you had for breakfast, and I don't want to hear about the last time you had to go to the doctor. And I for sure don't want to discuss anybody's batting average. So
that's correct.
Yeah, I gotcha. Okay, Michael, thank you so much for coming on. We'll call you back probably next time. It'll be sometime after the 17th of Tammuz, which is in a couple of months. We always appreciate your efforts. Thank you. Take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman here. Are listening to The Jewish Hour. The portion of the week is Bahar Buchu Kosai, and it is Bahar Buchu Kosai wherever you happen to live in the world, because, well, not exactly Bahar Buchu Kosai, wherever you live in the world is Buchu Kosai in Israel, because the last day of Passover in the diaspora was no longer Passover in Israel, so they read a portion which we didn't read until they read Shmini. When we're still doing the holiday reading, and we read Shmini, and they did Tazria Metzora. And I haven't been able to really find out why it is that we had to wait all these weeks for the catch-up, but we are caught up as of this week as we're reading Bahar Buchu Kosai, and people in Israel are reading just Buchu Kosai. The very last commandment of the book of Leviticus is one which, if you're just casually Bible reading, which casual Bible reading is okay. I suppose if you've got nothing else to do, pick up a Bible and casually read it. But you would have picked up this, just probably glanced right through this commandment and said, whoa, I'm out of the book of Leviticus, and now I'm getting into at least back into some Bible stories with the book of Numbers, because that's what the book of Leviticus is like. The last mitzvah is Temura, which means improperly exchanging one animal dedicated as a sacrifice for another. Let's say what happened. A person said, I'm going to Jerusalem, going to offer up an animal for, they got to have to do some obligations over there, got to do my thing in the temple, and I'm taking this animal to be the sacrifice. And it just so happens, so he schleps this animal all the way to Jerusalem from wherever he's from. Now, one of the things they have in Jerusalem at that time were animal markets. And he happens to notice that the animals that they have in Jerusalem, because they haven't walked all the way from wherever this guy walked from, but were transported, they look a whole lot better than his. So he's thinking, why should I offer this scrawny sheep for my sacrifice to God? I want it the best way possible. I'm going to switch. I'm going to exchange this sacrifice for a better one. Or whatever the rationale may happen to be. The point is that you're not allowed. Once an animal is dedicated as a sacrifice, it is a sacrifice. It's dedicated to God. And what's the deal? Is that if a person does this and says, I'm going to switch this one, so both of the animals now are dedicated as sacrifices. So what the guy did is he now has an extra sacrifice, and then there's a fine placed involved with it for having done this prohibition, whereas he really wanted to, he just could have said, okay, I'm going to do this one, and I'll do that one, which is really what he did, because he was just trying to get away with something. And I don't know what he would have done with that little scrawny sheep to begin with. He's going to march it all the way back to where he had to go. Why bother? So now, with everything else, there is a lesson learned, which applies as applicable to the 21st century, because the Bible is not a history story. There are no arcane concepts, something antiquated or something we don't do anymore, but rather what we have to do is to find relevance to our life, to it, at least in an allegorical, if not a homiletical way. So it's a very good thing that a person should dedicate their whatever it is, part of their day, to the Almighty. Let's say, for example, the first part of the day, person decides that they're really going to emphasize that this is going to be when I do something good for Judaism. You should stick to it. Like, for example, we mentioned the first part of the day is because that's usually when a person's most awake. They're fresh, they had their sleep, they're ready to go and riffing at it. And this person says, I'm going to spend time learning at this point. I'm going to learn Torah. Shouldn't come up to his mind and say, you know, it's really not such a great thing. I got this to do. I got that to do. Wouldn't it be better if I did that? And the answer is no. Once a person has made a decision to do a good thing, the rule is even if something comes up better, it might not be better because everybody has a Yetzer Hara, an evil inclination. And the job and purpose of the evil inclination is to get us to not do the right thing, if not necessarily to do the wrong thing, but to not do the right thing. And here it is, this person has decided, I'm going to do this, and this is the right thing to do. And then comes his brain, you know what? Do something better. Don't do it. Stick with what you did and the reason why, and analyze it. And if you really do believe that this is something better, you better really come up with some good rationale and reasoning as to why it is better, and then stick to that. We are going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard. The Spex Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Harry Schulfinman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Easiest way? Go to my website, rabbifinman.com, rabbifinman.com, all one word. And right there on the homepage, you'll find the contact link. What else will you find on rabbifinman.com? Archived editions of the radio show, going back almost close to 2 years. Yes, you'll also find archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U-Story, ways in which We try to present Judaism in an easy-to-digest form. You'll also find the very, at this point, very, very important donations page. We're into May, yes. Today is, May 7th. So 1 week of May has gone. We are still struggling to pay off April, and we need your help. We do this every month. And we've been doing this every month now for 22 years. And I've made the promise, if we get May paid off anytime before May, like if suddenly all the things I need for April and May come in this week, then I just don't even bring it up. And I'll go straight to the Hasidic story. You get a longer Hasidic story. And wouldn't you rather hear that than me here, sitting here and trying to make you feel guilty into contributing to the Jewish Hour by going to your computer, clicking on rabbifinman.com, clicking on the donations page, clicking on a number or writing in a number of your choice. Make it a monthly so that way you can do it without even thinking about it. Do it today. Don't forget, do not like giving credit card numbers through websites, even though there's no problem, it's all through. All very safe and secure. No problem. Send your donation in any amount to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Story takes place, interesting enough, is there was a person by the name of Shabtai Katz, depending on how you pronounce it, who was a rabbi in Pretoria, South Africa. He was not a Lubavitcher, but his son was sent to Lubavitcher schools because I guess there was no other schools to send one a rabbi's son in Pretoria. So he became a Lubavitcher, and he tells the story of the My Encounter website, which is where I got the story. So in the mid-1950s, the father was in New York, and received an audience with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He had been in contact with Rabbi Weinberg, who was visiting South Africa on behalf of the Lubavitcher Yeshivas, and was very excited, and he himself went with his wife to visit the Lubavitcher Rebbe and to talk over things with him. And he asked him, one of the questions he asked him is, being that he's in Pretoria, which is the capital of South Africa, as to whether he should be involved in the anti-apartheid movement. The Rebbe said, I don't remember the woman's name, he said that he is very enthralled with the Jewish position on apartheid because no one should be treated as a second-class citizen. As we know, the history of Jews for the last 2,000 years and even longer, 2,500 years, is that Jews have been put in the position of being treated as second-class citizens, and he named a member of parliament, the South African parliament, who was Jewish, and her stand on apartheid and the way she was opposed to it. And you're talking in the 50s. Apartheid didn't go down until the 90s. It's like 40 years prior. And he said, but as far as you're concerned, the Rebbe used an expression, you should put out a fire in your own house before you go help somebody put out the fire in theirs. And he said, look at your own community. You're fighting assimilation. You're fighting teen boredom. You have children that are falling off the way. And you have problems with, I mean, back then he says he had problems with drug abuse. He had all kinds of problems that were going on within Judaism and the education of people. And he said, take care of that. And then when that's all taken care of, then we'll worry about your involvement with apartheid. And then the Rebbe said, evidently this Rabbi Klein was involved with the military. He said, the Rebbe said, I was involved in the military. And I was involved with the Navy. And the way things work is when a commandment is given, listened to. He said, are you prepared to listen to what I said to you? So this Rabbi Katz responded, I was in the army. And when you come to the general asking his advice and the general gives an order, you listen to it. And the Rebbe said to him, no, that's not the case over here. In this instance, you're not going to do it out of a sense of command, but you're going to do it out of a sense of conviction and love. Are you prepared to do it, stay in Pretoria? I guess one of the questions was to move out of Pretoria or get, you know, just not be involved with this anymore. And he told him, yes, that he was prepared to approach his function as a rabbi in Pretoria out of conviction and love. That was the end of the private audience. Many years passed, and this Rabbi Katz had the opportunity to visit the Lubavitcher Rebbe again in New York. As soon as this Rabbi Katz walked into the door without anything else being said, the Rebbe said to him, "Are you still in Pretoria?" And he responded, "Yes." And he said, "Are you there with conviction and love?" This is after many years and remembering this conversation. We want to thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care. Segura.